Season 4, Episode 10, My Wild Irish Nose. It opens up with the neighbor of Jimmy Leary rolling up to the precinct saying that her crazy neighbor put a bullet in her wall. And she talks to Kirkendall, but Russell and Simone overhear it. And Simone's like, "Did you hear that, huh?" She plays it off like it's no big deal. She says, like, "Oh, she's gonna die of fear." And then Simone, like, kinda gets a little pissy, and he goes to the coffee room and asks Kirkendall if he could take the case. There's a reminder that he's getting promoted. A little foreshadowing for the end of the episode.
Oh, yeah.
And then he runs out of the precinct and grabs his coat as Sipowicz comes in, and he goes, "I gotta go out," and just, like, bolts. And there would have been an opportunity probably for a Sipowicz one-liner, but instead we had the theme song, and this is NYPD Blue Balls, where two brothers, me being Kirk, the other voice being Kyle, go through every single episode of NYPD Blue, and this is the theme song to NYPD Blue. Before we talk about the episode as a whole, I kind of think that there was too much shoved into this episode.
Yeah, there was a lot.
And I think, like, they made scenes shorter and they cut down stuff just to make it all fit. Because there's, like, three storylines going on at once. The least important is a kid right after the break. A kid is brought in by a cop with a silk shirt. And he says, "I gotta talk to a detective. Tell the detective what you told me." And this kid named Marco Ramirez says, "I know where a dead body is. If I tell you where it is, take away the shoplifting." When they sit down to ask him about it, he says that he was going up to a dude's room to get a boombox. And when he got up there, the guy negged on the boombox, but there was a dead body in there. And I don't know, maybe I'm crazy, but I think Martinez jumped to gay favors way too quickly on this kid. That's the thing that made me, one of the reasons I think it was rushed.
Well, unless he knows, unless he's using his detective skills and he knows something.
Well, because the kid's seriously like, "Oh, I was going up to get this guy, a boombox off this guy, and then I see a dead body," and he's like, "What'd you do for the boombox?" And the kid's like, why do you say I have to do anything? And then he's like, "Oh, he was just going to give it to you? How old are you?" And the kid says, 16. He's like, basically, Martinez is like, "Bullshit." He's like, "Okay, 15, I'm going to be 16. And he goes, "Bullshit again. You want to get the AIDS? You want to die on the street?" And I was like, okay, like, and then he called him an idiot. Like, that's how it ends. And I was like, shit, man, you've jumped, like, 8 steps.
And he was so angry.
Like, he was so pissed at this kid. And it was so fast.
I mean, spoiler alert later on, but doesn't he kind of mention, like, he sees his brother in this kid?
Mm-hmm.
That's why.
To finish that story off, because it's kind of like the least important one, they go to the apartment, there are two dudes selling off all this dead guy stuff, and there's just a dead guy in the middle of the room. Which, I mean, there must be some pretty shady, low people in the world to just buy shit out of a room where there's a dead guy in the middle of it.
Do you need this story? You know what I mean?
No, you really didn't. That's the first thing, like, I thought, too.
That's what's weird, is, like, do you really need this, like, do you really need to show another, like, druggy story? I don't know. It seemed like they had so much from the previous episode to build off of, to kind of focus on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It was just weird. You're right. Anyways.
And it feels like, oh, we had to have something for Martinez and Medavoy to do, when it's like, you really didn't. Like, there's been a fine amount of episodes that don't involve either of them out fine. So why did you have
There's a lot of episodes that don't involve certain people that they just don't have any storyline.
So they have these two dudes and they're selling off all this guy's shit. And, of course, they're saying, oh, we think he had a heart attack. We don't even know who he is. They bring them both back to the station house. And they're sticking to the story. We were doing some drugs. He had a heart attack when he had to go to work, so we left and came back, and he died. So then we just started selling his stuff so we could buy more crack. They check in on the kid again, and basically Martinez has the heart-to-heart, but it's so rushed that it feels so disingenuous, because he's like, hey, man, so I'm going to get you into a program. The kid's like, I don't want to go into a program. I can't go home. He's like, oh, so your parents are alive? Because he said they were, Marco said they were dead. He's like, yeah, man, my dad beats on me. He's like, what about your mother? He's like, I miss her sometimes. And, like, they go through the steps so fast.
You sound like Mr. Mackey being interviewed.
Okay.
I miss her sometimes.
But they jump through it, and then they give him some comic books when they get the news that the guy actually died from blunt force trauma. And his brain broke underneath the skin, so there's no proof. Or there's no outward signs. They go back at the other guy. It was two guys named Arnie Schreiber and Tommy Mullen. And they did a pretty good job playing druggies, but like it was just so not interesting in this episode. But they talk to Tommy Mullen, and he spills that, okay, so we got a bunch of crack, and we were doing the crack. And
As one does.
And the one guy who has a job was like, hey guys, I have to stop doing crack so I can do my job. And they were upset because they wanted him to just buy more crack. And Arnie hit him over the head with a bottle, and he just seemed to like kind of daze him, and they wanted to knock him out, so he hit him again and he died. And they were selling all of his shit so they could buy more crack. But like the entire moral of that is just don't do crack. It makes you do terrible shit.
Yeah, it kind of seems like the more and more I've learned about crack is that it de-evolves your brain into only wanting crack. And that's it.
Yeah, it's not cool.
It's really interesting. You'll sell everything, even your bed and everything, just for crack.
I mean, I feel it's like the same thing for heroin.
Oh, I'm not well versed in heroin. Sorry.
you only studied in crack. You minored in crack studies.
Yeah, it was my age. It was my age. I was born '86. So I was like, that's the year of crack. So yeah, out here in New York, you always are around people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like in LA, there's a fuck ton of people there, but you're in your car most of the time, so you're not like around people.
Mm-hmm.
But here, when you're walking everywhere and you're taking the subway, you always see people who are like strung out,
mm-hmm.
and it's like the weirdest thing to see, because you'll see people like literally like standing, but like they're bent at the waist, and like their head is almost touching the floor, but they're still standing, and they're not like falling over, but they're like leaning. It's called I forgot. Like they have a term for it, like dope lean or something like that out here, crack lean, where they're like strung out and they're just like leaning but they're not falling over. But it's like in the middle of a park.
Just like out there in the seven open.
People. It looks like if you go to those parks you see those old Asian ladies doing like Tai Chi.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like crackheads just like like not falling over. It's really interesting. But it's just and it's like early in the morning. We used to play basketball like 8 a.m.
They call
and there'd be like 9 or 10 people out there just like already strung out.
It's called doing crack tree.
Crack, oh my god.
A couple of the lines from that storyline.
No, crack tree is when you bend over and your butt crack comes out. That's crack tree.
Jesus.
I'm well versed in the art of crack tree.
There's a couple of lines in this investigation that were interesting. Martinez once yells at the first guy, Arnie Schreiber. I think he's like, you ever offer a boombox for someone to handle your Johnson? And then Arnie responds with, not to my recollection. The way he puts the emphasis on recollection. And then when Martinez talks to the kid again to figure out he has parents and his hard life, the kid mentions like, oh, he's a dope fiend. He wanted a Master Blaster, which is taking a pipe while getting a BJ.
I've heard that so many times and I just kind of ignore it.
Which is just like, geez.
It's called a Master Blaster.
Or the character from Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. Is that his name?
But here's the question, like, how do you, as a writer, right, of NYPD Blue, how do you find out that that's what that is?
There's no Urban Dictionary.
Yeah, and like, or are you like, you a crackhead?
Bill Clark heard it.
Like, Oh, were you, like, in the crack world?
And then Martinez is like, hey, so you want to stop blowing dudes for boomboxes and just go back home?
Maybe he does it. Like, who, like, here's the thing I've learned with NYPD Blue, right? Or, like, watching this show, is when all these kids are in trouble, or, like, when they pull kids or people in, and they're like, all you do is crack every day, don't you want to stop? What if they don't? Like, what if they want to do crack? Like, what if they're just happy living life doing crack? Like, stop trying to change them. You know what I mean?
It's their journey, and their journey may include killing themselves with crack.
It leads them to crack. It leads them to crack. Yours led you to be a narc. Like, I don't know. Like, what do you want me to do?
Well, at the end of the... Because they admit to it, at the end of that story, the kid's dad shows up, Mr. Romero.
Is he a returning character?
I didn't notice. Or
not a returning character, but a recurring actor.
I honestly did not recognize his face, so I don't know.
Unless he's in a later episode and I'm recalling it, but I feel like I've seen him in other things before, that dad.
I mean, I can check it out.
It's not that crucial, Kirk.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing that dude's face elsewhere. But he shows up, and he's a dick from moment one. And Martinez kind of has to give him a little bit of a hip check and go, I'm going to be talking to Marco, and if you're beating on him, I'm going to lock you up for child abuse. And then lets him leave. Because, and like the big straw, like the straw that broke the camel's back with this guy, is the kid's like, hey, can I keep the comic books? In theory, because he didn't finish them. And the dad freaks out, like, no, is that how you get around bumming? He's like, no, dad, I got around blowing dudes for boom boxes. Do you want to know? Like, if the kid just, like, if the kid just clapped back with, no, I'd rather blow dudes I don't know than deal with your bullshit. Like, I think it would be, it'd be a little better.
But I think the thing that we're missing out on is that kid loves music so much that he would take a dick to the mouth for it.
And this is an old school boombox, so in theory, he also has to get like 8D batteries.
Yeah, so like, how much more dick is he gonna suck for those batteries? You know what I mean? Those, and especially then, like, you know, those D batteries were super expensive.
It's bringing a whole new meaning to D batteries. He's gotta blow
them. And they weren't no lithium ions either.
They were shitty ones.
They weren't lasting a long time.
No, he had to like blow. he had to blow the night manager of like Radio Shack to get some D batteries.
Oh, lithium ion. That's when you smoke crack, get a BJ, and stick a finger up your ass, too. It's called the lithium ion.
Anyway, we have fun. The other story...
Isn't it weird to think that as, like, human beings, we've evolved from living in caves to creating nicknames like the Master Blaster, where you smoke crack and get a BJ? You know what I mean? Like, we've come a long way, Kirk.
I like to think of the visionary that was like, you know what is the, you know what's just the tits? Getting a blowjob while smoking crack. It needs to have a name. Because it's something that, it needs some shorthand. There's just...
Yeah, something quick. So when I call my woman over, I can say, hey, give me that Master Blaster.
When I call over my other dope fiend friend who's into giving blowjobs. Anyway, I think we've hit our blowjob quota, so we should probably talk about other things. After Marco came in at the beginning of the episode, a familiar face to NYPD Blue, Walter Hoyt, showed up. If you don't remember Walter Hoyt, I don't remember the specific episode. I think it's Un-American Graffiti, I think is the title.
Yes,
that is it. He witnessed the murder of a graffiti artist by two thugs of this Italian mob, and he agreed to be a witness in the trial. And in this episode, those dudes stole all of his paintings. Because he is a serious artist.
They want him to back off, right?
They want him to back off, and they want him to... And because this dude, I mean, Sipowicz says it later in the episode. He's like, you got some balls on you, Walter. Because he just went to the dude's restaurant and was like, where are my paintings? which is pretty ballsy.
Yeah.
He's very serious about his art.
They kind of hint to the fact that he doesn't really understand that these guys are bad.
Well, he doesn't... how, because I say this a lot, it's almost like he's on the spectrum, and all he cares about are his paintings, and doing the right thing. He's like a guy that only cares about doing the right thing and painting, because he's like, they stole all my paintings. He's like, what do you mean they stole all your paintings? He's like, they stole my paintings. So I rolled down there, and I was like, hey, where are my goddamn paintings? And the guy said, how about I give you back your paintings and you take a trip to Italy?
Yeah.
And Sipowicz, it's really cool because Sipowicz kind of likes the guy. So he goes, look, I understand that your testimony will lead to these guys going to prison for what they did. But if you want to get your artwork back, I completely understand. And the guy says, well, what if I just wear a wire? And Sipowicz is like, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
Like, he gets...
It's all him. He's, like, driving, trying to catch them.
And Sipowicz is shocked that he would even suggest such a thing. They set that up to where he's going to wear a wire on the dudes. It turns out it's just a hit, because the dudes, like, throw him into a car.
Yeah, yeah, they try to get him...
They tried to peel away from the restaurant.
Yeah.
And they block him off. They block him off in the street... And then, because the guys are like, oh, your artwork's in the trunk. He's like, we're going to go to the airport. He's like, no, he said my artwork would be here. He's like, yeah, it's in the trunk. Get in the car. And then, as they're pulling the dudes out of the car, he's like, can we open the trunk? Like, he's like, could you just open it and check? And that's when Sipowicz is like, man, you got balls on you, Walter. After they bring the guys in, they talk to Cohen. And just from the recordings, Cohen is like, yeah, there's no proof that they're going to murder him. Even though on the
record... Yeah, Cohen's kind of a buzzkill.
Well, because all the recordings say is like a dude force a guy into a car. So Cohen's like, you have basically wrongful imprisonment, and that's all you can get. And Walter says, I have no doubt in my mind that they were trying to kill me. Does that mean anything? And he's like, you can feel that way, but we can't prove it in court. So the plan is to go after one of those muscle heads again, who did the original murder, and see if they can get him to confess. That scene with Fancy and Cohen, it ends with Walter saying, I really hate to lose my work like this. Fancy's like, I appreciate your feelings. And then weirdly, Walter just goes, you can see how some people come to violence. And there's like half a second where you're like, oh shit, is he going to turn into like a superhero?
Well, no, because they all kind of look at him too.
Yeah, they all kind of
look at him like, wait, that's weird. He's never once been, like, angry to the point where he's like that. You know what I mean? Like, after all of this, this is what made him get to that point. I think that's what that was for.
He's been in situations where they wanted him to be quiet before and he was in harm's way, but he never said anything that made them think, like, oh, he's going to try something on himself. But after he says it, it's like, oh, shit, is he going to turn into the Punisher? Like, what is... Like, just, like, so cold and unfeeling. And they put him under police protection, and then they go after this musclehead guy. That scene's really cool, because Sipowicz and Simone play this game on him, where they convince him it's better to rat on your boss now than have him murder you down the line, knowing you have information.
That old trick.
But it was so... It's like, I don't want to...
That old mafia trick. Get the dumb big guy.
Well, it's really good scene, and I don't want to ruin it or, like, give all the lines or whatnot, but it's really clever because Sipowicz says, let's play a game called Where Are They Now? And he's like, where is the bull? And he's like, oh, man, if I knew that, John Gotti would give me $1 million.
Sipowicz loves Sammy the Bull. It's like Sipowicz would give him a master blaster because... Like, anytime he talks to a mob guy, he's always bringing up fucking Sammy the Bull.
And it's really funny.
Sammy the Bull!
He says, Sammy the Bull admitted to, like, 18 murders, and now he's on a beach somewhere with a lady, and no one knows where he is.
Sipping Mai Tais, doesn't he say something like that?
Yeah, I think
sipping
so.
Sipping fruity drinks with umbrellas in it.
And then they say, well, do you want to be that guy, or do you want to be dead in a ditch somewhere because your boss had too many lines that day and decided you were too much of a risk?
Yeah, because he keeps calling him Cokehead Frankie.
Mm-hmm.
He called him that in the other episode, too.
Cokehead Frankie.
Cokehead Frankie Pashada. These names, man. Like a Dick Tracy movie.
And the dude they're talking to agrees to it, assuming he gets witness protection. And so Frankie is brought in by his lawyer, and he's like, this is a perversion of American justice. This is like Nazi Germany. And Sipowicz says, hey, you look all... Hey, you get told you look like Hitler, Frankie? And a little bit Bongo the Chimp?
Oh, my God.
And that guy, Frank, is like, you told me to be respectful, and this is what you bring me to? With Frankie coming in, Walter Hoyt comes in, and he makes Frankie walk around the entire building so that Walter Hoyt doesn't get seen by him, and...
Yeah, because they're trying to keep him alive still.
And Sipowicz says, hey, so I got some good news. He's like, you found my painting? He's like, no. And even at the Buzzkill meeting, where Cohen says they don't have anything, Simone says they probably destroyed all your paintings so they get rid of the evidence.
Yeah. That was kind of a bummer moment.
Because he said he worked 2 years. It's 2 years of work, whether you agree or not agree that art is work. Like, it's still 2 years of somebody's time. And they enjoyed those things. When Sipowicz says, I got some good news, because we flipped one of the guys who's going to go in for the murder and admit to it to get witness protection, they're going to get that guy who was putting the hits out. And he's like, but, you know, we don't have anything on your artwork, so forth. And then the guy kind of stares off into the distance, and he just says, I'm going to try more direct expression in my work. And then kind of explains a little bit about his artistic process.
Yeah, well, it's interesting. I like that scene because Sipowicz shows that he kind of is, one, like, he's interested, but, like, he doesn't really care or understand it, but, like, he sees that this may be, you know, I don't know, it just looked like it seemed like he was like, oh, this is an opportunity to, like, talk to him about it and maybe make him feel better. So, like, Sipowicz showed that he gave a shit, even though he probably had no idea what he was talking about. And, but, yeah, I don't know, it was cool.
And he says, Sipowicz says, does that make the painting you gave me worth more or less? And the guy says, well, that depends on what happens next. And Sipowicz says, yeah, I guess that's true generally. There's also a meeting that I forgot to mention about the Marco case, where Martinez in the hallway sees Gina. And, you know, they're playing that romantic card with those two. And he has a heart-to-heart where he says, this just reminds me of my brother, who if...
It's like watching two, like, C students try to talk to each other in the hallway. D students talk to each other in the hallway about liking each other.
The talk that Martinez and Gina have is about Martinez's brother and how he used to do drugs, and then he eventually died. And so it's just a quick heart-to-heart that almost doesn't even need to be there, especially in this episode, because it's so crowded.
But it's there to show you why he cares about Marco.
Yeah, that's basically it. It was just him being like, oh yeah, people who have watched the episode will remember that I had a brother who was on drugs, and then my dad pushed him a little too hard and didn't want to deal with it, and then he ended up dying.
But Kirk, he's also being open and being vulnerable to Gina.
Mm-hmm. He sure is.
That's girl porn right there. Emotion.
Now, the most important story of this episode, it starts...
Oh my god, I forgot about this storyline.
There's so much going on.
So much.
Simone...
He hasn't even been made fucking first grade yet.
Nope. Simone rolls up to Jimmy Leary's apartment, and he knocks on the door, and he says, New York detective, and Jimmy Leary's like, yeah, what about it? He's like, come on, let me in, man. And the guy said, I think he said, you can kiss my ass. So Simone breaks his nose.
Have you noticed that when Simone is angry, mad, or upset, he goes 80s jock on everyone? He's like the nicest jokes. Dude, and he's like caring and all of that, but when he needs to be mad or mean, he's like 80s bad guy. Like, he's the Karate Kid, the villain from Karate Kid, where he's kind of like a dick. He like kicks people, kicks the door open, he's mean, he's like illegally searching an apartment
<'Cause> to
get what he wants.
That's what happens. He He kicks down the door, and Jimmy Leary clearly knows he's a career criminal. Like, he knows what can and can't happen. Because he's on the floor and he's bleeding, and he's like, "What's this about?" He's like, "It was just about the hole in your neighbor, or the bullet in your neighbor's wall, but now it's about you being an asshole." And he's looking around the apartment, and he's like, "I don't know about any bullet." And he's like, "The bullet's in her wall." And he's like, "Would you believe it's for protecting a woman?" And then he tells the story, but including the idea that it's a woman he's screwing. He says that, which I'm sure pisses off Simone.
Oh, 100%, because Simone's not with her.
Uh-oh. They're going after Jimmy Leary. So...
Sorry, yeah. The sirens are right there.
It's all good. We got a little time.
It's good. It's background ambiance for the show.
He's on the floor and he's bleeding. And then Simone has a gun on him and he starts searching his apartment. And he goes...
Yeah.
He goes...
Yeah.
And he goes, "Look, man, I'm not going to jam you up for the broken nose." And then...
I mean, that's pretty cool. He's being a pretty cool dude about it.
Jimmy Leary is being a pretty cool dude about the situation.
Yeah, because think about it. He could be screaming. He could be causing a scene. He could be doing so many more things that could cause there to be, like, more eyes on the situation.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not. He's kind of just like, "Hey, man, just let me go."
He even includes in his explanation of what happened. He's like, "Oh, the battle axe was in the hall. And I thought I sold her on the exploding microwave or toaster, but I guess the evidence is in her wall." And Simone is just, like, frantically looking around his apartment, and he even, like, goes into his bedroom and goes, "Do you hear screaming in here?" And, like, kicks the door open.
Yeah.
And he pulls out, Jimmy the entire time is like, "Look, man, I'm not gonna jam you up for this. Like, you could just go." He's like, "I would hate to give up the woman's name, and now it cost me a broken nose for trying to protect her." And he pulls out an AK-47. He's like, "An AK-47, what are you, Russian military?" And the guy goes, "Duh." Also, Jimmy Leary, I mean, I doubt you're listening to this episode without the others. Jimmy Leary is played by famous face Christopher Maloney.
So you acknowledge that if you were to listen to this episode,
you probably
without listening to the others, it wouldn't make any sense. So if on the first 5 episodes we said what our names were, then we shouldn't have to say it by this episode.
Hey, Kyle, could you please continue to be obstinate about this thing that all podcasts do? Anyway.
It's kind of funny, that whole scene. And in the end, Jimmy Leary is protecting Diane.
And...
Because Diane's the one who shot the gun.
And...
But Simone's pissed at the wrong person.
And Simone is also doing everything wrong.
Yeah, he went by himself, which is number one.
He did an illegal search. He hit on the guy. And then... When he's dragging him through the front door, he's like, "Oh, my little punchy, I guess someone slipped me a Mickey." And there's kind of like this moment on Jimmy's face.
After all of that, he gives it up. You have like 10 more minutes, just keep your mouth shut.
And he brings him to the station, and this is like a really weird series of events, because he brings him to the station, he vouchers the AK-47 at the desk, where he gets the paperwork for it. He tells Gina to have... the boss meet him in the hallway and to put Diane in the bathroom. And he brings Leary upstairs, and as he's bringing Leary upstairs, Leary, who has done this before, goes, I think it was like 11:29, he's like, "It's 11:29, my name is James Leary, and I am requesting a lawyer."
And then I think he goes, "How you doing, sweetheart?" or something like that. Like,
he's like, "Hello, sweetheart, James Leary, asking for a lawyer."
Yeah.
And Simone says... "Oh, why don't you ask him about... or why don't you start talking about that broken nose?" Basically, like, no one's gonna give a shit.
Yeah, Simone is really off... It's, I don't know if he's off his game or if he's just not... He's on his game, he's just ignoring the rules.
I think it's he's on the game, but he's ignoring the rules. He wants...
He's doing it for that pussy, Kirk. Let's be real. He's doing it for it.
Let's be real. This is a segment of NYPD Blue Balls called Let's Be Real.
Like, what else is he doing it for? He's not doing it for the, like, what Superman would do it for, like, justice, you know?
Truth, right, justice, wrong. In the American way.
He's not doing it for that. He's doing it for Diane. So, I mean, whatever.
So he brings him up, puts him in the pokey, and then he says, like, he catches Arthur Fancy, and he's like, hey, so this guy had
You can stop calling him Arthur Fancy.
Why?
There's only one, there's literally only one black guy in the group, and he's the boss. Just call him Fancy. You don't have to call him Arthur. You're
Fine.
Not his wife. Only his wife calls him Arthur.
Fancy
Everyone
is in the hallway.
Fancy.
Even
the fucking racist guy, I forgot his name, he calls him Arthur. He calls him Fancy.
Fancy.
Shemansky calls him Fancy.
Fancy is in the hallway, and Simone says, I caught this guy on a complaint, and he had a machine gun. He's like, in plain sight? He's like, on his bed. And then Jimmy Leary is like, yep, I used it as a pillow. And then he, like, looks into the precinct. He's like, requesting my sacred right to counsel. And then he's like, get him a phone and put him in the room. So they go into the bathroom, and basically everybody has a shit fit on everybody.
Yeah.
Because Fancy's like, Simone brought in Jimmy Leary. And Russell takes a shit and's like, what? And then Fancy's like,
what the fuck?
And Fancy's like, you didn't know about it. So then Simone comes in, and she's like, what are you doing, Bobby? He's like, I was... it turns into, like, the most passive-aggressive, shitty meeting. Because it's literally Simone going, I did the complaint. He had
I'm
an assault.
I'm doing my job, Diane. That's what I'm doing. Yeah. I'm doing my job, and he so happened to have an AK-47 out and about. Okay,
because
that's what's happening, Diane. I'm sorry for doing my job.
Because she's like, you're fucking up my case. And he's like, he had an AK-47. And Fancy's like, in plain sight. He's like, look, go get the guy he assaulted in the park. He'll point him out. And then we have our warrant. And if we don't have our warrant, we'll see if it sticks. And he's like, I'm going to bring in the, I guess, OCCB, whoever that fucking is.
That's the blonde lady that Diane was talking to that one time.
He's like, I'm going to get her on this and see what she wants. And Simone's like, yeah, she's really going to tell you to stop an operation she started. And then what's her name? Russell is like, oh, the right thing to do would be to put him outside.
Yeah.
And then Fancy's like, I'm going to ask her about it. And then, and like, so they're arguing back and forth, or all three, like a three-way argument. And then Sipowicz comes in, has no idea what's going on. Russell
Sipowicz is just sitting around.
Well, no, he's setting up the sting for the art guy. So he's like the art.
But isn't he just sitting around for a little bit though?
Well, he went out to set up the mic and to get everything set up for this sting.
Yeah.
And when he does, he comes in. He's like, "Hey, so I got the artists wired up." And then Fancy's like, "Hey, I want you to take Simone on that bust." And Simone's like, oh, so I don't have a say in how this goes? He's like, take Russell, too. And then Sipowicz, quite, like, legitly, was like, well, I already have Medavoy and Martinez. He's like, take them all! And then as he leaves, Fancy's like, soft close! And then slams the door. And then Sipowicz is like, okay. And Simone's like,
I had that option in my life.
What, just to...
People are like, what are you, like, Kyle, why are you dressed like that? And I'm like, oh, it's a soft clothes day.
Wearing soft clothes.
I'm just wearing my soft clothes.
Quickly, Simone explains, like, I brought in Jimmy Leary. He's a psycho. We need to get him off the street. Like, it's been too long. Diane's in trouble. He's like, they're not going to just pull him out because they're going to want him and his partners. And then Russell...
Kirk, real quick. How does Fancy, after that little bathroom scene, not realize and go like, oh my god, this is way too personal?
Yeah, really.
Like, this is everything that's going on, this is like a personal thing that's happening. We need this, like, this is not what our taxes are paying for.
It should also...
Jimmy Spitz to clear a vendetta.
It's also, there should have been a moment where he's like, oh, and by the way, we're having a fucking meeting about this. at the end of the fucking workday.
Yeah, and one of you's gots to go.
Because the shit is getting out of control.
This is why you shouldn't have been together. Oh my god.
So, as when he's talking to Simone, and he's like, well, what do you want to do about this? Russell, like, throws the door open. He's like, I thought we were taking this painter. So they go to the sting.
Everyone is acting like a child.
They go to the sting. Oh man, there's so much that still happens. They go to the sting. There's a conversation between Sipowicz and Simone where Simone lets Sipowicz know that Fancy did put him up for a promotion. They just didn't accept it. Sipowicz says to Simone, "You being a first grade detective, you know he's telling the truth." And then there's some quiet in the car. And Sipowicz is like, hey, you know what we could do? We could put some stink on Jimmy Leary's friends. Maybe we could just bury our heads even further into a situation that isn't our problem. And maybe...
Not even that. Sipowicz is basically saying, like, hey, Simone, I got it. I got how we can solve this problem that you started by thinking irrationally and emotionally. Let's go and just make up lies. And not only make up a bunch of lies, but we'll go and we'll do it on tape to people we work with.
Well, they didn't even know they didn't know it was wired up. I don't think any of them knew that.
They had to have known.
I don't think any of them knew.
They had to have known. Come on.
But what's great?
They're not going to send Russell in there unwired. So maybe instead of wiring her up, they wired up the place. Like, come on.
Another new segment. It's called Come On.
But they just went in there and just made up a bunch of shit, like, and then just, like, walked out.
It's also a very interesting scene because it seems Sipowicz basically tells the bartender at the bar that Jimmy is always at that Jimmy is flipped, he's given everybody's name, you might want to get ahead of it before you're the one stuck with the bag. But what's cool is he's no longer Sipowicz, he's like this character who isn't just a regular detective. And Simone doesn't want him to do it, but he's not outright stopping him. He's arguing with him in character.
Yeah, they're acting, Kirk.
But the thing that is weird is it seems like Simone really doesn't want Sipowicz to do this. He has a second thought. But Sipowicz has decided, oh no, we're doing it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I can see that.
But it's awkward because it's now like 2 degrees not Sipowicz's problem. He's only doing it because it's kind of a problem for Simone because he stuck his nose where it doesn't belong. And then Sipowicz is like, don't worry, I got the ball and I'm running with it.
Well, no, yeah. Sipowicz basically goes, hey, Simone, don't worry. You won't be in trouble anymore. I will. And what are they gonna do to me? And he just goes.
And it ends really... It's a fantastic scene, in my opinion, just the way they talk to each other. Because the bartender's a real dick, too.
Yeah, but he's cool, though. He was a good actor. A good sleazy bartender guy, though.
And he says at the end of this explanation that Sipowicz gives, he's like, "Oh, so you guys are cops?" Like in a sarcastic way. It was great.
Was it great?
It was. And as they leave, Simone says to Sipowicz, "You're a real asshole." And he said, "Yeah, that's probably why I don't get promoted." Oh, that's so awesome.
Well, I mean, that's why he didn't get promoted.
That's another thing about that car talk, because Sipowicz says, I have a fan club that meets at 1 PP, and they meet in a storage closet, because he knows that they don't like him, because of his drinking and his antics.
But he's very self-aware. He knows why. It's weird, because I'm, like, you know, you don't really hear him, when he does say stuff like that, he never says, like, yeah, people don't like me because, you know, I'm an asshole, or I'm this. It's always like, you know, my drinking and like the person I was always is a drunk. And he knows it. He knows he's not a bad person. But anyways, like, to wrap this all up, they basically from the beginning to end of this episode make up a bunch of shit lie and get this dude killed.
Well,
spoiler.
Because there's two things I wanted to mention about that. The
spoiler.
The moment
Jimmy
when
Larry gets killed. And it's Dipowitz and Simone's fault.
The moment when Simone lets Jimmy Leary out. Well, Simone lets Jimmy Leary out. He gets told by Fancy that we're going to release him. He goes to release him, and when he does, the guy Jimmy Leary is like, "Wow, must be a slow day here." And then he signs for a shit, and he goes, "So that Mickey comment." And Simone's like, "Yeah, what about it?" He's like, "That's just an expression." He's like, "Yep, just an expression." And I feel like that should have been the title of this episode, "Just an Expression." I don't know why, I just thought it was a really good line.
Is it an expression, though?
No, it isn't. That's why it's awesome. But the other thing that was really cool is he starts walking out Jimmy Leary, and Jimmy Leary goes, "Maybe I make some paper out of this for you and the mayor, and so it'll cost you for the sucker punch." And Simone looks him dead in the eye and says, "Or we can go outside and I'll give you something to sue about." And it was weird. It was like Jimmy was measuring up to Simone, and then Simone's like, "I'm not going to flinch, so if you want to fight me, we can fight right here."
I don't know. Like, normally I would take Simone, but I feel like it would be an even fight.
You think Jimmy's got that crazy strength?
I think he's also, he's part lunatic.
He's like one fourth.
He would do something that Simone wouldn't ever think of doing. Because I just feel like it would be tougher than Simone's given Jimmy credit for. You know what I mean?
I do. The end of the episode is the
flipping what I'm flopping.
And that's another thing. I think there's too much in this episode because we could have shown the death of Jimmy Leary. You know what I mean?
Kirk, we still haven't talked about him getting promoted.
I know, but when when he gets it's the end of the episode. When he gets, well, it's not actually, but when he gets promoted, Sipowicz shows up late and he says, I got a sitter. There was worry that he wouldn't get a sitter in time.
He was going to get a sitter. He was just being a big bitch. He was just hurt and he was like, wasn't going to go. And then when Simone told him, you know, Fancy stood up for you and put your name in, but they told him no. And Sipowicz, you know, you said the line, and Sipowicz kind of was being sassy about it, and then Simone
sassy.
Was like, "No, he really put you up."
He's being
then
a sassy.
Then Sipowicz was like, "Okay, I'm gonna go." He was just being a big old baby and had his feelings hurt. But then when he realized that he was put up and it wasn't, and that people, the two people he cared about, actually cared that he was promoted or not, he was gonna go.
I wanted to talk about the moment when he gets to the promotion ceremony before everybody. And the commissioner has some FaceTime with him, and it reads like every fucking upper management meeting with one of his peons. I mean, word for word, it's him going, "Hey, I wanted to show you that I appreciate all your hard work. I know you were promoted because of A, B, and C that was written on the paperwork that I approved of to get you promoted. Thank you for all
that
your
I,
hard work.
That I read before this, so
yeah.
When I tell him that you get promoted, it's for these cases that I'm telling you that you're good at now."
And then he's like, "I really wanted to meet with you yesterday, but I was busy with somebody else that you will know and realize that I'm being genuine and serious. Thank you for your hard work. I'm going to go to a different person and give the exact same speech to them." I was like, God, like, it kind of made me angry because it's like, oh, that's just every workplace.
Yeah.
That's just every workplace you ever work in. Hey, what's going on, team? But yeah, that's what they do. They're like, "Hey, we appreciate all your hard work here.
He doesn't know me from the 9 people he walked by to get into the store, you know?"
Yeah. He's like, "Hey, good job, Lyle." Because he had overheard someone say it.
Dude, some motherfucker at work keeps calling me Travis. Now, here's the problem with that. I've been called different names before. Because when people ask me my name, I don't really say it loud.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, "Oh, Kyle." And I'm like, "Oh, Kyle." And they're like, "Kyle?" Or sometimes I get Ryan. But this motherfucker keeps calling me Travis. And it wouldn't be that bad if we didn't wear name tags.
Oh, my God.
If we, like, we wear, like, anyway, sorry. But yeah.
That's funny. That's really funny to me. Okay, Travis. So,
I don't even look like a Travis.
Well, after his talk with the commissioner, fucking Russell brings him to the payphones, and she's like, "Oh, did you know that Jimmy Leary was shot?" And he's like, "Okay." He's like stone cold, no emotion. And then she's like, "Yeah,
you don't give a fuck. That's what he wanted."
And then she's like, "Yeah, apparently his buddies got word that he was cooperating with the police, so they murdered him." He's like, "Uh-huh." He's like, "Also, they had the place up on wires, and you and Sipowicz were on the wires, telling him that they were..." He's like, "Yeah, he got killed by a murderer. Why do I give a shit?" And then, and then he says, "If you think I should feel bad about this, maybe you shouldn't go." And then just, like, deuces.
Nah, dude, he was pretty... He gave no fucks about having that man killed.
No, none.
He never cared. He never cared. So...
Even in the next episode after this one,
it's a baller move.
They make it clear that the audience shouldn't give a shit about Jimmy Leary dying, which is a bummer because he's a really good character, and they should have at least, like, shown him die or had some type of, like, actual exit for him. It was literally the last thing we heard of him was Simone threatening him in the stairs, and then he walked away.
So, yeah, I totally agree. I feel like we should have got more episodes with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like they will try to fix that when they have Kirkendall's husband come back.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like when his little arc way down in the future is way too long. And really shitty compared to... And I would have liked to see Swish. I would have rather had Leary have a longer story arc. And then when we get to that one be shorter. But I just think I also like the actor.
Yeah, he did a really good job. Christopher Maloney.
Yeah, it's just good.
Rest in peace, Jimmy Leary.
I mean, I don't know about that. He drugged a woman, but...
Hey, okay. We're not 100% sure of the circumstances, except we are.
Hey, sticks and stones, baby.
Hey, Bill Cosby, not that bad, guys. So, I mean, he delighted us all on The Cosby Show.
A jury has said different. The Jell-O pudding.
He gets promoted. It's a standard NYPD Blue event where, like, nothing's really happening that's important. It's just he's getting promoted. Russell ends up watching, and she and Sipowicz leave, like, right after it happens. They don't shake hands or social it up. The end of the episode, I don't know how to describe it. I was very confused. Russell shows up at Simone's place, and Simone is, like, desperate to get her to have a fucking cup of tea. Because she's like, she tells the story...
That they emphasize so much tea with this man. You know that, right? I feel like they're always, like, mentioning tea, or he's grabbing tea, and it's like... I don't know why they, like, slam that home with his, like, storyline. You know what I mean? It's kind of interesting.
She tells a story about a jacket and how she wore a bad jacket for snowy weather and she was always cold, but she didn't want to lose her figure and she just thought she would always be cold. And then that somehow relates to the love that they have together, but she couldn't say yes. And then they just hug it out. To me, it feels like it was a written story to be way more serious and, like, supposed to tug at your heartstrings, but I was just like, what the fuck are we talking about?
Yeah, it's a very, very weird little monologue.
And then he's like, "You sure you want this?" And she goes, "Yeah." And he's like, "Was that so hard?" And it's like, you're making jokes right now, man? She's having, like, a breakdown and not making any sense.
Oh my god, he's such a child. It's kind of...
annoying.
It's like... Yeah, a little bit, because it's like, dude, just hold, like, chill a sec.
Yeah, you just got a dude who she was spending a lot of time with and trying to get into his life. You just had him murdered.
Yeah, and she was also going through, like, a lot of psychological shit before she was drugged when it comes to this dude.
Uh-huh.
You know, let her process. She has, like, a shit ton to process. And I don't know.
I mean,
it's just like he's such a dude.
The big question of the entire episode, I mean, there's a lot of stuff that we missed. There's a lot of great lines. I mean, just watch the episode. It's awesome. But the thing we really have to ask ourselves is, did Simone just go way over the line and just accidentally come out with the best possible scenario for himself, and he has no concern for everybody else.
Oh, he has no concern for anybody else. Except for Russell.
Because it seemed, from what I could tell, this woman says, oh, there was a bullet in my wall. And he has a moment with Russell after he lets Leary out, where he's like, you should probably stay away from him a couple days, I think. And she's like, why? And he's like, well, because shit's a little crazy right now. You probably don't want to just head over there. And she's like, well, it could close in a couple days. Maybe you should just stay out of it. And then he's like, well, I'm sorry being the ex-boyfriend and just concerned. And she's like, oh, ex-boyfriend. Hmm. And I was like, what the fuck are we talking about?
Yeah, she...
Like, what...
They just act like children the whole time. And just fight. It's really, really weird.
And it's also dangerous for him to not mention, like, okay, I did make a Mickey crack to him, so when you see him, he might be a little upset thinking that you told on him to somebody.
Oh, yeah, he never mentions that.
Because in theory, if she rolls up to Jimmy Leary, he's like, hey, what's going on, Jimmy? What happened? He's like, oh, I got my fucking nose broken, and the guy was asking about Mickey's. Do you want to explain that to me? And start freaking out. It was so... Maybe it's because the episode was so short, but what he did was so fucking dangerous and, like, stupid.
Yeah, he would have killed her. No, yeah, Leary would have definitely killed Russell.
I mean, yeah, I don't... He would have at least put the hurt on her really bad, if not murdered her.
But because she would have told on him, he would have killed her.
Or at best, he's like, guess what, we're not hanging out anymore together because you told the cops about slipping you a Mickey. Luckily, he didn't find out anything about my big plan, so deuces, you're done. I'm not talking to you anymore.
Yeah. Uh-huh. 100%.
So, he just fucking flipped the script and did whatever he wanted, and then just... It worked out in his favor, so he's technically the hero, is like how the episode turns out.
Yeah, but it could have gone horribly, horribly wrong.
Oh, man. Anything else about this episode you want to mention or talk about?
No, I think we hit it all. It's just, like you said earlier, just a fuck ton going on.
I think if they took out the Marco stuff and expanded the Jimmy Leary and Hoyt stuff, it may have been a better episode, because Leary literally just disappears. He has an off-screen death. The Hoyt character is more interesting than all the characters in that other investigation.
I agree with that. I definitely agree with that. I really liked his storyline in Un-American Graffiti.
And he was just so cool to walk into the station and be like, yeah, they stole my paintings. I went and talked to them, and they said, come back and we'll give you the paintings and a trip to Italy. So can I get a wire so I can incriminate that dude for being a dick?
Yeah, he was ready to go. He's very bad boy-esque. Will Smith styles.
Every episode of NYPD Blue Ball is on AsherBrothersPodcast.com, iTunes, and Stitcher. You can check us out on Twitter at AsherBrosPod, Instagram AsherBrothersPodcast. We mostly just mentioned...
Stitch her, stitch him.
What?
You said stitch her. I said stitch her, stitch him.
Okay. We mostly use the social media to mention when
new episodes... Don't you huff at me, bitch.
We mostly use them to let you know when new episodes are out, and have a good one. Thank you once again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. If you have a moment, please go rate and review the show on whatever app you're using to listen to it. If you rate and review it, it might show up more in people's search results with the algorithms and the whatnot. It's the internet. I don't understand it. But if you leave a review, I guarantee you I'll read it and do my best to continue doing the show exactly how I do it, because I don't have a lot of money or time to change it. If you need NYPD Blue, the show, you can always check out Hulu and Amazon. They have every episode of seasons 1 through 12 up on those streaming services. If you need more NYPD Blue information, you can check out True Blue, a book written about the first couple seasons by a creator and a consultant of the show. You can check out Gene Kendall's Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue, a companion
compendium to the entire series, where you check out What Would Sipowicz Do, a collection of articles written from different perspectives on the show. There's a lot out there. Thanks for listening. Please keep listening and keep watching the best show ever, NYPD Blue. Peace. Season 4.
Is it too loud on my end, or are you okay? Sorry. My bad. That's a good start, though. I'm just, we're off kicking and screaming.